Making a lot of money is great, but I can promise you in a lot of sales roles, you're going to have a chance to make a lot of money if you really work hard. It doesn't fall in your lap. But beyond that, there's going to come a point in your life where you realize the money is not what's going to make me happy. I need to think about who I am as a person and what I want to be as a person.
And I'm Libby Gladys.
We're hosting the Tech Sales is for Hustlers special campus series.
There are almost 5,000 colleges and universities nationwide, and only about 200 have dedicated sales programs.
We are finding the leaders of those programs to get a behind-the-scenes look at how they're prepping the next generation of sales stars. Join us as we talk about their own career journeys, what advice they have for students considering a future in sales, and insights into what every student needs to know for a sales career. The Tech Sales is for Hustlers special campus series.
Welcome back, hustlers, to the Tech Sales is for Hustlers campus mini-series podcast with Memory Blue. My name is Libby Gladys, and I'm here with Kristen Wisdorf. And today, we're actually hosting Terry Lowe. He is the executive director and founder of the NCSC, the National Collegiate Sales Competition, as well as the director of development and external relationships at the Center of Professional Selling at the Kennesaw State University. Terry, welcome to our show. We're so happy to be meeting with you today.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate you guys having me.
Of course. We'll start things off today. We like to ask our guests the first question that we typically ask our students when we interview them, which is, what is your 60-second highlight reel, Terry? Walk us through a bit about yourself and how you became the professional that you are today.
So I listened to some of your previous podcasts just to see how I might answer this question. And I don't think I could do it in 60 seconds, but as boring as I am, about me, most important things in my life are my faith, my family, my wife. I was a jock. I played all sports growing up. When I got to college, I played Division I baseball, had a chance to go to the World Series a couple of times, played in a lot of professional scouting camps and summer leagues. So that led me to some of the things that I do now and some of the things I helped create or develop. I got into interesting theme because I look at goals are a big part of any salesperson's life, but it was a big reason that I and where I am today. So I always thought I wanted to teach college, but I was going to get out and make my million first. So I figured by the time I was 35, I'd be able to semi-retire and just teach college and have the good life. I ended up doing that except for making the $1 million. And the path was very interesting. So I played an extra year in college and got my master's degree because I broke my hand. But by doing that, it allowed me to begin to work toward one of the goals, which was to become a college. And in 1981, when I did that, it was a very interesting path because I really wasn't sure where I was going to go. I just knew where I wanted to be. So I got my first job in management, worked in that a couple of years. That company went out of business. And one of the things I always thought is if I get out and I'm successful, make the $1 million, it's going to be hard for me to quit of all the money I was making. God saw fit to put me in circumstances that led me over that. So in the 11 years after I graduated from college, I had 5 companies that went out of business that I worked for. I got into sales after my second job, mainly because I thought I have to work hard because I'm not that smart. And I always thought if I work hard enough, I'm going to be fine. So I always worked 60-hour weeks regardless, but I was on salary. The opportunity came up for me to get into sales, and I thought I really want to do this because if I work hard, I might as well, make money doing it. So I got in my first sales job in about 1983, and it was in investment business. I got my Series 7, my Series 6, sold bonds, but basically what I got back then was a phone book and a phone. Of course, most people don't realize what phone books are. We didn't have computers. We didn't have cell phones. So you had to be creative in getting in front of people. On that first job, while I was on the phone a lot, and I got in at 7 in the morning and left at 7 o'clock at night, I started doing presentations, seminars to possible investors, which allowed me to get in front of a lot of people and do that. So I had to be creative in doing that. That company went out of business for various reasons. And then I got into with Kidder Peabody and Dean Witter. 1987 occurred. The market corrected. They closed. Got into an automobile dealership with a friend of mine. So I sold cars for a couple of years, and then they went out of business. I'm not taking credit for any of these companies going out of business. Then I got into the insurance and investment business, and I did that for about 6 years. And then when our daughter was born in 1991, my wife's family practice physician, and she practiced for about 35 years. But I think we thought we were going to have the kid, and then 6 weeks later, she's going to go back to work full time and everything. But her maternal instincts kicked in, and neither one of us wanted our kids to be raised by other people. So she quit full time private practice, and I quit my job entirely, went to school. So I did the doctor work at the University of Memphis. She went back to work at the health department, Memphis. So we cut our income by about 75%. But remember, one of the goals I had was to teach college, and I never knew if I was smart enough or not, but I figured out how to do it. So I finished in 96, went to Baylor University, which is the first school in the country that had a sales center. Was right in there, but Baylor started their program in 1985. And I was around a good group of colleagues at that, including Jeff Tanner and Larry Chonko, Bill Weeks. Some of those guys were really good. So from there, I moved on. I've been teaching since that time, moved to Kennesaw State in 2003. And so I've been here since that time.
That's such a good story, Terry. And it's interesting. You have a lot of experience. You were in investment and cars and insurance, and you were an athlete growing up. And I think you played it was Mississippi State, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's exciting. So you played baseball at Mississippi State. You ended up getting in sales, and now you teach sales. I want to focus on that bit about being an athlete or being a jock growing up. What do you think you learned playing sports growing up, playing collegiate sports, and how do you think that impacted your sales career, or did it impact your sales career?
Yes, in a couple of ways. One, I hate losing. I do not want to lose. I hate losing more than I want to win. So if I'm not the best, which I never was the best, I'm going to work hard enough in order to succeed at whatever as I do. So that in every level, in every career, you're faced with obstacles. The five or six companies that went out of business that I worked for, I could have laid down and cried. I wanted to a couple of times, but I had a vision about what I wanted to do. I had a goal. In sales, especially, having goals is important. In life, it's important. But not just dreams, something that you can actually tangibly write down. So I knew I wanted to be a college professor. Wasn't sure of the pathway to get there, but it laid itself out. All the experiences I had have contributed to whatever small successes I've had in sales. The funny thing is, every year I was in sales, I doubled my income from the first year, and then the company went out of business. So you have to start all over to do that. But I kept thinking, these are things out of my control. And growing up in sports, I worked hard and I had a lot of success. Of course, when you get to college, you realize there's a lot of really good athletes in college. But even in college, I rode the bench for 4 years. And then my last year, because I worked every year, worked hard, and I was seeing progress. But I started my last year and I was a team captain. I made all SC, all this, and had success. So I always felt like I had control, at least over the input of my success. You rarely have control over the output. So the number of sales I make, I don't have as much control over that as I do the activity that I'm engaged. Yeah. So that's a long answer. That's what related to my athletic background and having to get through adversity to see success at some point.
Definitely. And your point about just ultimately like your work ethic being the reason that you were successful, but also the fact that you said like you didn't play right away, you rode the bench for a little bit. I think a lot of people coming out of college, whether they're entering sales or not, think they expect to be successful immediately. And that is such a real life example pre-sales of putting in the work and putting in the time to get ready for it. And I think a lot of students can take something from that in their first sales job out of college.
Especially because as we talk to our students here, the prospecting piece and building your pipeline, building a network takes a long time. And the analogy I'd normally use is prospecting is a lot like pushing a 2-ton boulder. You push and push and push and put the effort in. Sometimes there's immediate payoff. Sometimes you get a big deal and it's great and it helps you. But normally it's a slow process. But when you get that boulder moving, you really, once you get it going, it's still hard and you still have to put effort into it. But after a time, and now after doing this for 30 years and I still sell, I have to raise about $200,000 a year for the center at Kennesaw State. but also have to raise another $500,000 a year for that national competition. So I'm out raising $750,000 a year. And when I first started, I had to talk to people a lot and get on the phone and reach out to people and start making connections. And now after all this time, and of course, living long enough and being old, I know a lot of people. And a lot of people have been a part of that national competition that we do. So my network's built up. It's a whole lot easier to push that boulder, but you still have to push it every now and then just to keep the momentum going. And I think that's related to sales, that you just have to survive. In some sales, you have to survive for 5 years. And then after that, you understand better what it takes to be successful, and you can work more efficiently and more effectively. It's like in sports. When you go from college from high school to college, I'm used to seeing an 85-mile-an-hour fastball and an 82-mile-an-hour curveball, but now I'm looking at 95-mile-an-hour fastballs and 92-mile-an-hour sliders and changeups and all these other things. Everything's so fast. And when you get out of college, that happens the same way. You get out and there's all these people who know what they're doing. And so it's really moving fast, but the more experience you get, the harder you work, and the quicker you get built up your experience. And you can do that faster if you do research and talk to more people and create more activity. Things slow down for you so that I can see things more clearly and what works, what doesn't work, and I can respond or react in a more effective manner than when everything's going so fast. So the experience and working hard helps all that.
I love listening to your story, because you prefaced it saying, I wasn't sure where I wanted to go. I had this goal in mind. I knew where I wanted to be. And you started in sales. That was your first step towards this long term. You're still in sales now, selling for the collegiate sales competition and building out the program and teaching and selling students on sales. I think that a lot of people, to Kristen's point earlier, a lot of students specifically, they want to move into a closing role and make money immediately. They want to be that big bad sales rep making thousands of dollars. And you have to start somewhere. And that first role is often where people realize that they're good at it. So I want to talk about that first sales position that you were in, because I have a feeling that something may have happened during that experience where you were like, I'm really good at this. This is what I want to pursue as a result of your experience. So maybe walk us through the highs and lows of that first sales position and maybe why you had that aha moment that you wanted to pursue it long term.
I'm not sure if I ever thought I was really good at this. I'm still not sure if I am. But because of that, I work really hard. I've listened to your past podcast and listened to what's some of those guys and ladies said about it, and I relate to it. I had a sale where I worked with an account for probably a year and a half, almost 2 years, and the payout was about a $25,000 check to me. Back then, that was a lot of money, but I still thought, okay, this, and I could see where this was helping them. My activity, goal-driven. I wanted to be successful, and success in sales often is going to mean making a lot of money, but as you look at that, if you're just doing it for the money, it's just not as rewarding. It's not as fulfilling. And at some point in your life, when I graduated, when my wife and I quit our jobs, we cut our income by 75%. So we went from quite a bit of money to not a whole lot of money. And I realized at that point that the money was not the driving force in what I was doing, because we were perfectly happy on the amount that we were making. When I was in college and she had quit her job and done that, we got to know the people around us in a smaller neighborhood, smaller house, and you just realize that's not what it is to be fulfilled. And especially in sales, because I think that's one of the driving forces to try to make a positive impact on the people around you. And that's in sales. As a college professor, I think all the faculty and teachers out there realize that when you can see the difference you make in some students' lives. But then also, when I work with Memory Blue, and hopefully you guys had a great experience at the NCSC, but it allows you guys to recruit some high quality candidates, cut down on some of the time you have to spend going to different universities and going all over the country, and you get some good quality candidates who are going to make a difference at your company. I know that, I'm convinced in my heart, that's what we're doing, is we're making opportunities for students who are trying to start their careers. But also, I think we're trying to have a positive impact on the companies that we work with as well. So that's really the driving force. And I think having the goals, not knowing where I wanted to go, I knew where I wanted to be.
That's interesting. You said when we started talking that you knew that you wanted to be a college professor. How, and you had this goal, how did you know that? Was there someone in your life or something in your life where you're like, I want to be an educator someday?
No, I was the first person in my family to graduate from college. And I have an uncle who graduated from college, but I was from Alabama and from a bunch of poor people. So it wasn't so much that, but as I grew up and as I got out in my first jobs, I taught in Sunday school. I worked with a lot of young people there. I enjoyed it because you really get involved with their lives and you can see how what you're doing in some instances, not every instance, that there's an aha moment to them. And as faculty who teach or teachers who teach, you realize that often you tell your student over and over again, or my kids, I've got a 30-year-old and a 28-year-old, you tell them, and then they hear it from somebody else.
And then they believe
it. Wow, that's so true. And I think I've told you that 100 times. As a teacher, you get to work alongside, hopefully, the parents and society and saying, these are the right things to do. This is how you have a not only a successful career, but a successful life. So as I taught in my Sunday school and worked with young people in young groups, and I've taught pretty much all my life in church with young adults, college students. Now I'm old, so I'm teaching people your age and in their 30s and 40s. There's a lot of reward in that.
Yeah, you mentioned you wanted to have a positive impact on people's lives, and you're absolutely doing that as a professor. You run the National Collegiate Sales Competition. Libby and I have both been. You're absolutely right. There is incredible talent walking around and competing and traveling with their universities there. It's very interesting. You've been running the program for a while, and I'm really interested to know how it started, how you got it going, and how you've grown it over the last 20 years now at this point. Wow.
Started in 1999. Again, the athletic background came into mind because I'd competed in the World Series twice in several SEC tournaments and a lot of other championship events and had success at it. But I always thought at that time, when I got into academe, there were only one school. Baylor University had the first sales center. And again, I think I've mentioned it, St. Kate. Also had one around the same time. We all knew each other, and we still do. It's a very small community, as I think you guys have found out. And probably 95% of us have been in sales. So I think all of us pretty much have a passion for impacting sales positively. But the competition piece allowed me to watch Ramon Avila's and Scott Inc's students do role plays. And so I could see, okay, what are they teaching? What are they doing? And so as the faculty got together, and the faculty always come to that competition, it allows us to exchange ideas, watch and see in real life what that role play looks like and what they're doing to go through the sales process. But also another important aspect of it was to get you guys involved. I had IBM and Office Depot, Xerox in the very first competition. I had 8 companies that worked with that. But one, we needed the resources from you in order to put it on. But you also judge and buy and participate. And so there's a great opportunity to exchange ideas, not only student to student because they develop networks, not only faculty to faculty because we know each other. Also, we get to talk to industry. And although all of us have been in industry, most of us, we still need to stay relevant. And so the educational experience that goes along with having industry involved in our activities really promotes a more effective means of preparing people to be in sales. So you guys from our campus, as well as being involved in these competitions, we need you not just because we want your money, even though we need that. We need you to interact with and engage students so they can be better prepared. They develop better business acumen, better understanding what it's going to take to be successful. So all the students, this is targeted toward young people coming up, get involved, network, get to know as many people as you can. Even if it's not a company that you think you might want to work with, you should get to know them.
Absolutely. It's so interesting. The competitions are really incredible to go to. We have a lot of listeners who either their university didn't have a sales program, or they got involved later, or they didn't even know that these sales competitions existed or do exist. And so I think it would blow their mind. Not only is it like as real life as you can get, it's role plays, but you make it a game, which a lot of salespeople like, and they're competitive. And so you add in the real life kind of role plays, corporate partners, and the competition aspect, and college students all across the country. It is really kind of an experience unlike anything else. It's really exciting.
It is fun. I've told a number of people over the years, you know, having started in 99 and then doing it every single year since then, I've always said, when it stops being fun, I'm going to stop doing it. But even this year, and of course, we changed to the virtual environment. environment, and a lot of people had to overcome a lot of adversity. Students had to learn how to use podcast platforms, Zoom, WebEx, whatever it is you're using, Teams, and you had to learn how to respond and react and be effective in that kind of environment. It's an incredible opportunity for students to do that, and I think they need to be able to overcome any kind of obstacles that they have.
I was going to ask how the competition has changed over the last 23 years. I imagine, given what you just said, that this year was probably the biggest change of them all, going to the virtual.
We made some slight changes. I wanted to grow it slowly and not make big changes because we only have so many people working on it. So it's not like we can make a big production of it and make a huge change. Last year probably was the biggest because last year the competition was scheduled for March the 29th, 2020. March 13th, we found out we can't do it face-to-face, and we normally have about 1,000 people at that event. So we had to figure out in 16 days how to change 1,000 people from face-to-face to virtual. So that was the biggest change. This year, we had a little more lead time, and again, our sponsors, and I'm going to mention Gartner because they greatly supported it, but also all the companies who were involved who did not drop out. That saved us to put on the event and still provide opportunities for students and faculty. So that was yes, you're right. This environment was huge. But silver lining, everybody had to learn this technology.
That's going to prepare them for life after college.
And it's not going to go away. I think we'll still be face to face, but this is going to be a great tool, supplemental tool that I think everybody's going to continue to use.
Are you looking to join an industry with unlimited professional opportunity? It has never been a better time than right now to start a lucrative career in high-tech sales. Memory Blue has launched hundreds of careers for accomplished high-tech sales professionals from our offices coast to coast, and right now, we're in hiring mode. Working with us will accelerate your professional growth and place you on a path to success early in your sales career. You'll get world-class training through the Memory Blue Academy program and sharpen those skills with ongoing mentorship and coaching from our seasoned sales leaders. Memory Blue is in expansion mode, and we have immediate openings in all of our offices. We have been named one of the fastest growing private companies in the U.S. by Inc. magazine for 8 straight years. Our award-winning culture has been recognized by third-party industry groups as the best in the business, as we routinely add unbelievable benefits and rewards for our team. To learn more and apply to any of our openings, visit memoryblue.com/careers today.
Diving a little bit more into the NCSC competition itself, doing it year after year, making these improvements as you get through each individual competition and learning from it. What do you think the biggest challenge has been that you've particularly faced as the director since starting the competition? I know we just talked about the transition to virtual in 16 days. That must have been a huge hurdle. Would you say that was your biggest challenge?
No, in a way, because there's some side effects to this environment. The biggest challenge is always each year I still have my nut to crack. I've got a quota. I've got to raise enough money. So that's constantly on my mind. We've been fortunate and blessed that enough companies have always been interested in getting involved. Of course, I'm biased, but I think it's a no-brainer. You should do it if you're a company looking for entry-level salespeople. But student engagement is always the challenging part in this environment. And I know on our campuses, it's been more challenging because when you're sitting at home looking at a computer, it's just hard to get the juices up and the motivation up to get engaged. So you've got to keep a positive mindset, not Pollyannic, not so just going to be great and fine. If you don't work, it's not. So getting students engaged has been the biggest challenge to make sure they understand the opportunities. And I guess our success has been one of our challenges is because the students coming out of our program and other programs like ours around the country, we have virtually 100% placement rate. So they've gotten a little more comfortable in realizing I'm going to get a job and they're going to get a good job. And they're probably going to have a lot of different opportunities. Just keep their mind open to all the opportunities out there and to get engaged because we have to provide you guys with some type of ROI. You've got to be engaged with high quality candidates and you want meaningful conversations with those high quality candidates so that you have a chance to recruit them successfully. We went from using no phones to we have cell phones now and then we'd had no computers. Now we have computers. We're using more technology now. Change is always going to happen. You just can't panic and lose your head when change happens unexpectedly. You just have to keep your head about it and drive through it.
Absolutely. It's such a great point. The value of collegiate sales talent is astronomical. We're a business that exclusively hires entry level. So obviously we benefit so much from being able to recruit and participate in these events, just as every other employer out there that engages with these students. I'm curious, with all this opportunity in play, you being a mentor and an educator for the students that you're working, collaborating with, what advice do you give them when they are given so much opportunity? How do they go through that decision-making process, and how do you support them? And what advice do you share to help them make that decision?
You're talking about students getting jobs and figuring that piece out?
Yes.
Well, the older I've gotten, the more I realize I don't know that much. Each individual, like myself, I need to understand who I am and what I want, what my goals are, what my value system is. And when a student comes to me and I talk to someone yesterday, the day before, I've got these opportunities, what do I do? I said, you really have to make that decision on your own. But it's always better to have more information than less. It's always better to have more knowledge than less, which means you need to put yourself out there and really think deeply about where you want to be and what you want to become. And where I had a vision of being a college professor, but also with that competition, I always envisioned that as becoming the World Series of professional sales. I didn't realize all these other schools was going to start doing these competitions, even though we worked together on them. But I had a vision. I saw what it was going to look like. So as an individual, especially as a young person, you've got to, and it's a hard process to really be introspective about who you are, what's important to you, what's of value to you as an individual. Making a lot of money is great, but I can promise you in a lot of sales roles, you're going to have a chance to make a lot of money if you really work hard. It doesn't fall in your lap. But beyond that, there's going to come a point in your life where you realize the money is not what's going to make me happy. I need to think about who I am as a person and what I want to be as a person. And that's going to translate into where I am in business, where I am in my social life. If you're looking and you're not sure, think about what you want to be and then start looking at different companies and different opportunities and say, how do I fit? And you're never going to have all the information you need. So you have to make the best decision you can with the information you have at hand, and then don't look back.
That's great advice, especially looking back at your career, having to transition to so many different companies. You never know what's going to happen in whatever position you end up jumping into. 99.9% of people that begin that first role end up transitioning into something different over time. So that's a really great point, and I think awesome advice for students to realize, as important as the decision is of what you accept coming out of school, but there are a lot of moving parts to any career. And you're likely to see a lot of transitions, whether it's different companies, different promotions that you pursue. And starting in that initial sales role is just a point A in that long journey.
And some context to that, when I was growing up, it was a little bit different. So I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and somebody took a job and they were in that job for 30 years, 35 years. And that's what my mindset was. I'm going to take a position. I'm going to find the right company. I'm going to stay with them because that's really how you progress and grow, et cetera. Obviously, that's changed. But with my mindset then, the company's going out of business and me having to adjust and keep in sight where I wanted to be, that was a big change for me. That was a lot of adversity for me because I was expecting to have a long career with a single company. So when it happened, and again, falling back on my background, my faith always supported me in realizing God's going to put me where he wants me to be. I think I'm where God wants me to be right now at Kennesaw State. If I didn't feel that way and I didn't think that way, I would be somewhere else. But I've always realized if I work hard and do the right things, I don't have control over everything, but I'm going to be where I need to be, and I need to bloom or blossom where I am and do the best I can. And then opportunities then come up because you show yourself competent and successful at wherever you are. And then those opportunities tend to come up rather than being impatient.
That's such a good point. You talk a lot about you had this goal, you knew where you wanted to end up, and you had a vision, right? And your advice to students would be to know yourself and have a vision. And then you couple that with how hard you worked. At the end of the day, you can't control everything around you. You can't control what's going to happen to the company, but you can control your energy, your effort, your work ethic. Do you ever have students who call you after they get into their first job or a couple years out of school who are like, wow, this is not what I expected, or this is harder? Like, how do you help them get through the tough times? Because there will always be tough times in sales.
Again, two parts to that. One is, I think you have, in your first job, unless the company's doing something radically wrong, unethical, illegal, I've got to stick with that company for a while because you don't know enough about it yet. I think it takes 3 to 5 years to really know a company, figure out your job, and move on from there. So when you're in tough times, one, you got to ask yourself, am I in this situation because I'm not working hard and I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do? If you do, then change that behavior. If not, stick it out, work hard, do the best you can there. But then look at where I want to be. So you're quite, remind me of your question again. I'm sorry, that skipped my head.
It's all good. I guess what type of advice or how do you help students who graduate and they get into that, they hit the tough spot? Or we, all of our new hires here read the book, The Dip, yep, because ultimately you'll have that tough spot. And how do you encourage them to stick it out longer and keep trying and put in that work ethic?
I remember now, second half of that answer. Sales is highly personal, but it's also about the numbers and it's about setting goals. All the research and science behind this is about numbers. I know that if my conversion ratio is 10 to 1, I've got to talk to 10 people before I'm going to get one sale, and that's simplifying it quite a bit. But I'm going to hit those 10 sales or 10 calls every day, or 15 or 50 or 100 or whatever it takes. So I know that if my activity level is where it should be, then eventually that's going to work. And I saw it in my career, and I see it now as I work and contact people and get my goals in line. As long as at the end of the day that I've done what I'm supposed to do, I've made the calls, I've made the touches, I've done all the research and homework I need to do, and I've got a goal each day if I hit so many numbers, whether it's email or LinkedIn or cold calls or whatever it might be, I know the science is behind me. It's going to work. You just have to make sure you continue to do that. And then those slumps and dips, the harder you work, the more you realize those slumps and dips begin to get shorter and shallower over time. They always are there. You're going to have ups and downs. But for the most part, if you put in what you're supposed to put in, you're going to get out. At some point in time, you're going to reap what you sow.
Definitely. We talked about this a little bit on our podcast episode with April Schofield, where she was talking about whether or not salespeople are born strong or if it's something that can be taught. And your story is really interesting because you were a natural competitor your entire life. It seems like you were so involved in sports, and what motivated you and what pushed you was knowing that goal in the back of your brain and not letting yourself lose. Another question we ask our students or those that are interviewing for this role is, do you love to win or do you hate to lose more? And you answered that without us even having to ask. So I'm curious, do you feel that strong salespeople are born and they have these traits inherently? Or do you think that there are certain qualities that can be taught in the classroom or through experience in exploring these roles?
We answer this question quite a bit. And I will hear industry people sometimes saying, I'm just looking for somebody who's, you know, got that natural born instinct or whatever. But I've seen attitudes and people change. And again, it gets back to, I'd rather have somebody who's inspired rather than somebody who's motivated. You have to have both. I think you have to continue to motivate yourself each day because bad things happen every day. Nobody has it easy. Everybody's got it tough. Everybody's got something going on in their life, or will have if you haven't. And the world can beat you up. Sales especially can beat you up. So I recommend, and what I've done is I read a lot of Zig Ziglar. He was very motivational. He was all about sales. He hit on a lot of what it takes to be successful without all the research we've done over the past 30, 40 years. But he hit on the topics mostly. You keep a positive outlook. I would rather be around someone who's going to be positive. But I always read those books behind me. I've got an index of probably 600, 650 books that I've read. And I keep up with what I've read and how much I've read of each one, and whether they're leisurely, and I've read a lot of leisurely books, spy novels and detective novels and stuff. But I've read some, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, How to Close a Sale, Carnegie's books. You got to continue to put good stuff in your head. The music I listen to. I was listening to opera when you guys came on. I don't understand what they're saying, but it's inspiring to me. I listen to a lot of classical music, but also listen to a lot of contemporary Christian music, which is most always about hope and what can happen positively. You don't have control, but I know things in the end, if I do what I'm supposed to do, is going to work out. So you've got to keep putting good things in your head. Again, not being Pollyannic, it's not a magic trick. But the more I think about positive things, and more I envision being successful and positive, and again, that's not smoke and mirrors. It's not positive things. And therefore, when something bad happens, I say, well, you know what? that happens, what do I need to do now in order to get everything back on track?
Yeah, the mind is powerful, and the power of positive thinking, especially in sales, can have a huge impact.
Yeah, I don't want to, because my wife hates it, because her mother was a Mary Kay director. All this positive thinking stuff, there's truth in it, but it's not a magical formula in itself. You've got to really understand that the world is bad, and or can be bad, things can happen, and they will. I've got to work through that. I think Yogi Berra said it best. You guys know who Yogi Berra is?
Yeah.
So he's an old baseball player.
Yes.
And I actually saw him play some, but then he became the Aflac guy. But he always said funny things. But he said, baseball is 90% half mental. And I think that's the truth in sales and anything else. The way you think about what you do is going to have an impact on how you do what you do. So I've seen people at very high levels of skills in sports and baseball especially. But there's somebody at with an equal level of skills. If they have a different attitude, the ones who work at it hard and have that kind of positive attitude, they always succeed, or they always are better off. Because I've seen so many people with skills that fail because they weren't willing to work hard enough, and they just didn't have that vision about where they wanted to be. And I'm going to get through this, and I'm going to make it. And I believe, I've heard it on your other podcast, that I'm trying to impact lives in a positive way. Companies, individuals, even when I'm working, I want everybody around me to feel better when they're around me. Not blowing smoke up their skirts or anything, so to speak. But I just want to have others around me behave better, work better, and feel better about who they are and what they're doing. That doesn't mean you don't have disagreements and you can't be direct with someone, because when you're in a leadership position, sometimes you do have to tell somebody, you know what, you need to make an adjustment here. So anyway, that's it.
Learning about your story has been super enlightening, because everything that you're sharing, I feel you've learned it from personal experience. Being the first person of your family to get a college degree. You mentioned that your uncle did, but going from there, setting this goal for yourself, facing all the adversity that you did, and now being the accomplished professional that you are, I think that you just have a wealth of advice and personal experience to be able to talk to, which we appreciate you sharing so much. I'm curious, in all of the different roles that you've been able to tackle in your career, including your education career, what do you think has been the most rewarding or biggest win for you so far?
Having my children succeed and my wife being happy. We've been married 35 years and we actually got engaged. We dated for about 4 months, got engaged, got married. So I met her in October of 85, got married in April of 86.
Wow.
So I was a pretty good salesperson.
Yeah.
but it takes a lot of maintenance to continue that sale and keep them satisfied. But just from a personal standpoint, I'd rather be known as a good husband and father. And not that I haven't failed at that at times, but that's my most important. And then I guess second, that competition is interesting, because I really wanted to do it just for fun, because everybody would like it and be a lot of fun. But I think as I've looked at over the years, as other schools have started competitions and they've been successful and they provided a lot of value to companies like yours and to students, being able to be on the front end of that and seeing how it impacts lives is very rewarding. But it helps too, because you realize there's a lot of people that supported me and helped me out. I think of 15 people right now that were in this profession before me who provided opportunities for me to be successful, and I took advantage. We built on the foundation of those before.
Okay, Terry, when you, way in the future, years and years from now, when you look back on your career as an educator between Kennesaw and the NCSC and the thousands and thousands of not only students, but also other professors, other educators, and corporate partners, all the people that you've had a chance to work with and help, what do you want to be remembered for? When you look back and when they look back on your, you know, years of educating and running the sales program, what is like the one thing that will make you most proud?
That's a hard question. Again, my family's very important to me. But in this, I do think that this sales education community and higher education, I do see us as a family. I think we're close. Most of us know each other. I think we work together. I've always wanted to be able to share, realizing that others have shared with me in the past. So I guess looking at some of the guys and ladies that I work with, I just want to be one of the guys, and I'm no better, no different from anybody else. But I've been blessed in a lot of ways, and I have some resources I've been able to share. So I guess I'm sharing and being a part of the family and being a positive contributing member to the sales education community is, you know, something that I value, because I value the opinions and respect the people I work with out there. And I learn every day from Greg Accardo. I picked up that video editing or video email thing from him. And Pat Palantino's always got good ideas. Scott Inks, I've learned a lot from him here. So there's a lot of people that I still look to learn from. But just being a positive contributing member of the community is what, I guess, it's the best answer I have.
I think that that is an incredible answer. And in our few years of working together so far, Terry, I can definitely say that you've left that impact on me. We appreciate you taking the time and joining us for this podcast episode and letting us pick your brain. I know that the listeners will be able to take a lot away from the advice that you were able to share today. Thank you so much again for being here with us. And we will see you guys next time.
Thank you, Libby. Thank you, Kristen. Appreciate it.
Taking an individual's raw potential and turning them into a thriving sales professional takes the right training. That's where Memory Blue Academy comes in. Memory Blue Academy teaches participants the fundamentals of sales development and all aspects of a lead generation role, regardless of the level of professional experience or background. The course kicks off with a two-day intensive boot camp session, followed by a six-week ongoing educational program. This is the program every single Memory Blue SDR undergoes at the onset of their tenure. The curriculum covers a wide range of topics, including list building, objection handling, effective sales emails, and more. Participants will be shown how to successfully execute a diverse set of sales activities in a very short time, experiencing tangible and lasting skill growth. To learn more and sign up for a seat in an upcoming session, head to memoryblue.com/academy.
Thanks for listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Please subscribe and leave a 5-star review after the beep.